The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The greatest hoax in history. Yeah.
Thank you, Your Majesty. Is it true that you threw a tiny baby temper tantrum and stormed out of your infrastructure meeting after learning that Nancy Pelosi accused you of being, quote, engaged in a cover-up?
I don't do cover-ups. This meeting was set up a number of days ago at 11 o'clock. All of a sudden, I hear last night they're going to have a meeting right before this meeting to talk about the I word.
The what?
The I word.
Impotent?
The I word.
Irrational.
The I word.
Idris Elba?
The I word.
Oh, impeachment.
Can you imagine?
Well.
The whole thing with Russia was a hoax. And I will tell you, my lawyers say, you don't have to do this. You can use presidential privilege. You don't have to let your lawyers and all of your staff testify. Would you recommend it? Well, you can be transparent or you can be tight.
Sweetie, you seem riled up. Would you like a hard candy or maybe a ventilator?
These people were out to get us.
Well, if I may, Mr. President.
Some days, Democrats can be a pain trying to circumvent. It's hard to be the fake president. What crazy sounds you make. Is it a substance that you're sniffing? Or could it just be a sinus thing? Life just ain't rosy. Nancy Pelosi's creeping on your TV, acting shady. Tried to drop Mueller, thought this was over, but she's got your number now and you feel under attack. Just keep breathing, 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 and breathing. You know they might impeach. Keep on breathing. Just keep wheezing, seething, panting, grimacing. Your teeth are falling out. Keep your teeth in.
Presidential privilege.
You clown and mess around. Joking about subpoenas they give. Invoking so much executive privilege. But now things got you down. Thought that your Fox friends would never cheat. Why they all crushing on Mayor Pete?
Ooh, girl.
They just dissed Donald. Now he's disgruntled. He's breathing like my old man's carburetor. Ew. He cries no fair and claims he's transparent. I guess you could say he's right cause we see through him every time.
Madam Speaker, dozens of House Democrats, along with multiple legal experts and my Aunt Linda, have found clear grounds for impeachment. Where do you stand?
I don't think we should impeach a president for political reasons.
How about just for fun?
We have to see what the facts are. I mean, this is not a day at the beach. Let's hope that a level of maturity here will set in, because the American people expect results.
Just impeach him, impeach him, impeach him, impeach him.
Well, let me say.
Excuse me.
They say the only way you can reach him is impeach him, impeach him, impeach him. But you know it's what they want. Just impeach him.
Sir, you tweeted a video of Speaker Pelosi, which was clearly doctored to make her appear drunk or impaired. Isn't that a cheap shot?
What they've done is abuse. The President of the United States engaged in a cover. Oh, let's call Russia. Maybe they get it's a hoax.
Just keep tweeting, retweeting, misleading, and cheating.
Gross.
I hear a lot of phlegm when he's breathing. Just impeach him, impeach him, impeach him, but I'm tired of hearing them say impeach him.
Just do it already and let's go get a drink.
When your sky's falling, just keep stonewalling.
What is going on with his breathing?
What we've been huffing, is she just bluffing?
Keep your teeth in.
God bless the United States.
Girl.
Oh, my God. Oh, how much do I love Randy Rainbow. You know, just when you need a Randy Rainbow fix, up he pops with another video. There were just so many classic lines in that one. And it's a song that I had never heard before. I believe it's an Ariana Grande song that he was parodying. But, wow. It doesn't matter. You know, I always thought, okay, there's show tunes that we all know. This is a song, because I don't listen to Top 40 radio, that I had ever heard before, and it was still great. I love, I hear the phlegm when he's breathing. Oh, my God. And you know, thank you, because I wasn't feeling in the best mood. I got to tell you, you know, I've been feeling better lately. I was, I had watched the first season of The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu. And it was brilliant, but it was so dark and so depressing. And it was when I was going through this major breakdown that I went through last year. And, I had to finally, I mean, I made it through the season after some encouragement from some listeners who said it gets a little better if you can stick with it. It's not all this dreadfully dark. And so I made it through the first season. And again, I'm feeling a little better, but I'd heard the warnings that the second season was even darker. Well, I thought that the third season is starting next week. And I thought, well, let me give it a shot again, since mentally I'm feeling a little better. And, I watched the first couple of episodes and oh my God. What's so disturbing about this season is that it shows a lot of flashbacks to when the main character is somebody who's called Of Fred. Well, we learned her real name is June, and they have a lot of flashbacks to June before Gilead, before the United States became Gilead, and the parallels are really scary. The parallels to pre-Gilead United States and the Trump administration in today's world. So I don't know. I'm going to give the next episode a chance, but I may have to back out for my own mental health. Just saying. If you've watched it, let me know. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, the book, Diane Russell in the YouTube chat room said, I read the book. It was all I needed. The book, the first season was the book. After that, they go off into new territory. And yes, it's dark. Anyway, as bad as things are here, I don't want to say they're worse or even equally bad. They don't have Donald Trump. But that said, so much is happening over not only the UK, but all of Europe. They had, over the past week, the European Union parliamentary elections. So that went on. Included in that were the elections for the EU, I mean, for the UK. Sorry, these abbreviations are all getting to me. Now, we also know that late last week, Theresa May tearfully announced her resignation, that she said as soon as a new prime minister is named, she will step down because she couldn't get Brexit done. So let's see, we have Brexit still in question. We have the EU elections. We have the UK elections. Who better to ask about all this crap going on than our pal across the pond, Dennis Campbell. He's the publisher of UK Progressive magazine at ukprogressive.co.uk. And you can find Dennis Campbell on the Twitter machine, always at Client Loyalty DC. Well, hello, Dennis Campbell.
Good evening. How are you today?
Well, I'm okay. How are you today? How are things over there?
You know, today's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
It's just as crazy as it was before the election. Now, these are elections that weren't supposed to have happened because we were supposed to have left the European Union. But because we haven't finished getting out, we still had to elect, 150-something seats from across the entire United Kingdom. And it was kind of strange. It was a surreal experience to watch this massive change in attitude and approach to Brexit as a result of the absolute abortion, sorry, that's probably not the word to use these days, of a process over the last 3 years. I mean, we've been sitting here watching this slow-motion car crash, and finally we had to vote for parties in this proportional representation election. The Brexit Party did very well. They won, quite a high percentage of the seats. But
wait, so there's a Brexit?
Conservatives were absolutely thrashed.
Right, that's what I heard. So I didn't realize there was a Brexit Party. It's an actual political party. I guess it's much easier to start a party and for it to gain traction over there than it is here.
Oh yeah, much easier. And of course, the front man was Mr. Milkshake himself, Nigel Farage.
Oh God.
The only man I've ever known to be held and terrorized on his bus by a group of people holding milkshakes ready to fire at will as soon as he steps off the bus. So whoever came up with that idea is an absolute genius.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they didn't do it before.
For a while it was glitter bombing, which was always fun, but I guess that's really limited to LGBTQ critics.
Right.
So the milkshake attacks, this is something new. You're not going to hurt anybody, physically harm them, injure them with a milkshake.
Unless they're lactose intolerant.
Even then, it's not going to seep in through your skin. It's not going to make them sick. It'll just embarrass them a little bit. And I love it. I think it's so creative.
Well, he started this Brexit party because he's been essentially banished from UKIP. That was the party that he founded that did so well in the earlier elections. And he's got nowhere to go. He was going to lose his seat, but now as the leader of the Brexit party, he will be going back to the European Parliament with the goal, along with probably 25% now. They said it was close to 25% of separatist right-wing sort of parties, the 750 seats that are going to actually try and destroy it from within.
Now, I heard Boris Johnson was was the favorite to become the next prime minister. Is that still true after the elections?
You know, after Donald Trump, you just don't know anymore. I mean, anything is possible, and this is Trump light. I mean, he's totally unfit for office. He's a liar. He's a thief. He's been an absolute disaster in every role he's ever held, from London mayor to a member of parliament to cabinet member, foreign secretary, and the equivalent of your secretary of state. And everything that he has done has died. Everything he has touched has died, just like Donald Trump. And it is just interesting to see that he has emerged as the early favorite. And I'm not sure there's anybody that can really challenge him at this point. It's
God.
A very strange situation.
Oh, my God. That is frightening. Now, we know Donald Trump is headed over there in a week or two. There's a new Trump thing that's being shipped over to England right now. And it's I just posted it on my Facebook page. Apparently, it's like Donald Trump sitting on a toilet. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I saw that last week. It's hysterical.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just, We have a great love of satire in this country. We're just ready to be satirical at every turn.
This is a giant Donald Trump robot. He's sitting on a toilet tweeting while shouting, "I'm a very stable genius." So that is headed over to the UK for the protest
when
he's there. Yes, to go with the balloon. So
it's going to be a fascinating visit because they had a million last time. And they were basically in London where he wasn't. This time, he's in London.
Uh-huh.
He's going to Buckingham Palace,
boy.
He's going to be in the city. So it will be very interesting to see how he manages to avoid the massive crowd that isn't going to be there.
This should be interesting. All right. So when will we know the results of I don't even know how it works, because the voters all over the UK did go to the polls. It was the EU elections. And so they had their elections. When do we find out who the next prime minister is going to be?
Well, the prime minister is different. That comes out of parliament. The European Parliament is our representation as part of and members of the European Union. When with all 12 regions counted, the Brexit Party got 29 seats. The Liberal Democrats, my former party, got 16. Labour got 10, the Greens got 7, and the Conservatives got 4. That is divorced and separate from the actual election that's going to go on inside of the Conservative Party. The way it works here is that nothing really has changed other than the leader of the Tories, the Conservative Party, has now stepped down, Theresa May. That triggers an internal election inside the Tory Party, in which about 1,200 people are going to decide who the next leader of the party is going to be. And then that election is going to have a process of elimination. They'll go from a long list of however many say they've thrown their hat in the ring down to 3, then down to 2. And at that point in time, there will be debates on television, and this will happen mostly during the month of June, with the aim of by the end of June, before everybody goes away on holiday for the summer, a new prime minister takes over. And then they go away for the summer and they come back and they have September and October to decide what they're going to do about Brexit.
Oh, my God. So when is Brexit now supposed to be happening?
Well, we have a delay until the 31st, Halloween.
All right, of October. Right.
All right, so that will keep us going in one respect. But we're still looking at the situation and thinking we are no closer. If anything, the European election really sent a marker down, saying that there's absolutely no way people who voted, with perhaps the exception of the Brexit Party, want a no-deal Brexit. And indeed, Remainers won by about 12 points over those that do want to Brexit when you add up all the parties that were there. And Labour is now so spooked that they're throwing out members who voted for the Lib Dems and other parties.
Wow.
And they're also in the process of saying, we've got to now move swiftly towards a second referendum because they're afraid they're going to be diminished even further. I mean, the Conservatives finished 5th in this. That's
wow.
3rd.
Wow.
Yeah, that's...
Now you mentioned...
With only 4 seats.
Wow. You mentioned the Green Party. They didn't do great in the UK, but across Europe, they had their strongest ever election performance. According to news reports, running on a platform of transformative environmental change, The Guardian reported the Green surge was strongest in Germany, where Die Grünen finished 2nd behind Angela Merkel's center-right CDU with almost 21% of the vote. That's nearly double their 2014 total. Predictions Sunday indicated that overall Greens scored 71 seats in the European Parliament. That's up from 52 seats 5 years ago. And according to exit polling, their surge was bolstered by strong support from young voters. So maybe, you know, Greta Thunberg is having an impact. It may take a generation, which we don't have, to clean up the world.
No, but we've got some interesting people now going, and this was also viewed as a bit of a rebuke of the far right parties, because a lot of sensible people sort of came to the front. So you had Liberal Democrats led by Guy Verhofstadt from Brussels, and he's a Dutch speaking Belgian of a Flemish leader that you see very often on YouTube. He's very, very strong. They've made tremendous gains. They together picked up 38 new seats. They have 105 seats. The Greens have 69 seats. That's 10% of the seats in the parliament. Almost 10% up, 19 seats, which is a huge gain for them. But the Social Democrats, of which you would include Labour, lost 38 seats, and other parties on the left lost, as well as the European People's Party, which were the right wing, they lost 43 seats. So it's a much more balanced, but indeed the right did gain from 20 to 25% overall, the nationalists.
Yes.
The
now, somebody in the YouTube chat room just asked, Sharon asked, what's the deal with Marie Le Pen? Apparently, the far right, as you said, the far right nationalist parties didn't surge across Europe, but they are still strong and stable. Marine Le Pen's national rally finished ahead of Macron's renaissance.
And that was more of a yellow jacket, rebuke than anything else. I mean, Le Pen had lost to Macron. And so, and keep in mind also that turnout for European elections is less than even what you would see for a presidential election in the United States. And it's very rare that you get more than about 25%. Because of Brexit, we had a bit higher turnout rate here. I'm looking to get the actual percentage turnout. I can't find that on my screen at the moment. But it was closer to 30-35%, which is high for a European parliamentary election, because most people, when you ask them, you know, who you're going to vote for, they kind of throw their hands up and go, I got no idea.
Right.
Here in Wales, where I live, the Liberal Dems came very close to actually unseating Labour. They won 14.8% of the vote, which was down 13%, and the Liberal Dems had 13.2%, so they were just a point and a half away from getting that fourth seat, which would have been huge in terms. But all across the UK, the Lib Dems did very, very well, gaining 16 seats to the Brexit Party's 29. So wow. It was a bit of a ground-shaking moment. And the fact that Labour and the Conservative Party, the two main parties, did so poorly in this election sent kind of shockwaves across Europe saying, you need to start paying attention and working together and getting things done.
Right, exactly. All right. So anything else going on over there that we haven't covered? I mean, the world is obviously in turmoil, and I don't know that we survive this. I'm in that kind of mode right now.
Yeah. Well, I'm intrigued by what's going on over there, as is everybody. And I was on a radio program here in Cardiff this morning where people were talking about Trump and what his chances were of re-election. I said, you know, if you don't get the turnout up, very good.
Yep.
And which is kind of scary. And I think that's the fact that you've got this internecine warfare between different planks of the so-called left Democratic Party, unless you can find a way to resolve it better than you did with the Hillary versus the Berners, you're going to find yourself in the exact same place because of the black turnout was very, very low, as was the number of young people who just said screw it and voted independent. And that's what basically put Trump in office.
Yeah, I understand. And again, you said it riles me up every time I hear a pundit on TV saying, well, this election all came down to turnout. No shit, Sherlock. It always comes down to turnout. Whoever turns out the most voters, well, is supposed to win. Then we have the stupid electoral college that should have protected us against Trump. Unfortunately, it ensured that we got Trump.
When you look at the 3 million votes she won by, she won California by 2 million. That means she lost the rest of the country by a huge amount, which I thought was very, very interesting to look at when you go across the board.
Mm-hmm.
The flawed candidate, admittedly, but that 3 million came from just a couple of states, and you have to really
we don't do it like that. But the states that cost her the Electoral College, in those states she won by, I think the biggest margin was like 70 something thousand votes. It wasn't huge numbers. She lost very narrowly, even in the fucked up way we tally election results here in the U.S.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, Dennis Campbell, I'm going to run off and get Got a Laugh on the line. We'll keep an eye on what's going on over there. Thank you, as always, for your input.
All right, cheers. Bye now.
Always appreciate it. Bye-bye. Hi. All right. So that's what's happening in the UK, in Europe. That's and thankfully we have a good friend on the ground over there to tell us their world is just as confusing as ours. I must say. All right. Well, let's not wait any longer. We'll get to what's news maybe at the end of the show. I don't know. But right now we know Laffy is waiting for us. I just got to find here she is.
And now. It's time for the Nicole Sandler Show segment, Shooting the Shit with Laffy.
Well, it would help if I got her on the line first. I'm having one of those days. Okay, so let's call Laffy and we'll do this again.
And now, it's time for the Nicole Sandler Show segment, Shooting the Shit with Laffy.
All right, I'm calling. She hasn't picked up yet. Laffy, where are you? Hold on. Let me just check in the other chat. I'm calling you. Laffy, you call me because this isn't working. Because I am calling her. All right, so let's... are you there?
Yes, there you are. You've reached the late night calls between Trump and Kim Jong-un.
Okay. Hey. Shit.
Press 1 if you think Kim couldn't figure out why Trump kept texting him mushroom pics. Press 2 if you think they end their calls with, you hang up. No, you hang up.
Yeah.
Press 3 if you think they end their calls with, you blow up the world. No, you blow up the world.
Sadly, yeah. wow. And did you hear moments after, what's his name, Trump, deplaned Air Force One, Joe Biden's office put out an announcement here. It's just moments after Air Force One touches down at Andrews Air Force Base, keeping to the old unofficial rule that politics stops at the water's edge and you don't criticize the president when he's overseas. Joe Biden's spokesperson responds to Trump attacks, and what they here was their big statement. The president's comments are beneath the dignity of the office to be on foreign soil on Memorial Day and to side repeatedly with a murderous dictator against a fellow American and former American vice president speaks for itself. And it's part of a pattern of embracing autocrats at the expense of our institutions, whether taking Putin's word at face value in Helsinki or exchanging, quote, love letters with Kim Jong-un. An appropriate statement in response to Trump's idiocy overseas. But if Trump doesn't adhere to the old unofficial rule that politics stops at the water's edge, why does Biden feel it necessary to do so?
Well, because he's getting good press for that now. I've been looking and taking the temperature on Twitter, and everyone's saying, what a class act that was that he waited.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm.
See? So it's all politically thought out. It doesn't matter. You know, if he thought it would have paid off to go after him before that, he would have. Everything is a big calculation, which is one of the reasons, you know, politics gets so annoying.
Everything is politics, which is one of the reasons politics is so annoying. And again, the only reason that Nancy Pelosi is saying no impeachment is politics. It's a political decision on her part because she believes impeachment will negatively impact the Democratic Party and the election in 2020. I disagree, but who the fuck am I to say, you know, why would they believe me over her?
I disagree too, and it seems to me that she's losing a lot of her base when she does that, because everything I'm seeing, I'm hardly seeing any people now, as opposed to say maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, who are agreeing with her. For a while I was seeing, and I'm taking the temperature of Twitter, which is a whole lot of people, because I scour it every day.
Yeah.
But it used to be, I really see that she's doing the brilliant thing by, waiting and doing. Now I'm seeing more and more people say, well, you know what? It's time. Get off the pot.
Yeah, except her caucus, because they're now echoing her. Even, I got to say, as much as I like Ro Khanna, he's like completely, did you just keep stay the course and having hearings? What?
I know. I saw him on MSNBC. I think it was Friday night, or maybe it was Saturday. Oh no, it was on the Joy Reid. He was on the Joy Reid, as I recall.
Right?
And she was doing her best. I mean, she just kept challenging him on that and saying,
I'm actually surprised that Joy Reid is on the side of impeach the asshole, because she's usually, well in line with the conservadems, which our friend in the NicoleSandler.com chat room. I don't know how to pronounce. He pronounces his name. That's what it is. I forget.
That's exactly what I was doing. You just read my mind.
It's O-O-O-0-0-0-0-O. He said something about it. I don't even remember what he said at this point, but
he said that he was from the conservadems.
Oh,
that
the
he
conservadems
was
don't like Bernie Sanders. Right?
Yeah.
Bernie was one of you was urging caution too. It's something I disagreed with him on.
Agree with you that we both disagreed with him on that. Oh God, do you want to get into some tweets?
Okay, we can do that. I can even find the birdies, in a second.
Oh, goody.
They're here somewhere. Come on, birdies. There you are. Here we go.
Welcome to my tweet spot.
Okay, so what you seeing on the Twitters?
Well, the reason I wanted to get into the tweets is because I have a couple of threads and one article, and they're lengthier than usual, so I thought I would, you know, do this. One of them, and I want to get to this one first, is, there it is, the Justin Amash thread.
Oh yes, he's back.
He's back! And he's a lot better than the Democrats in the House are at this
Unbelievable. Yeah. So this time, you may recall, in our last episode, we talked about Justin Amash and how he wrote this long thread laying out how the Mueller report shows Donald Trump is guilty of obstruction of justice, and he lays out the case in a tweet storm. Now he's back and tweeting about Attorney General William Barr.
And here he be. Oh, I just lost it. Let me back it up. Sorry, I just clicked on one and it just destroyed it. Here we go. All right, he starts. Attorney General Barr has deliberately misrepresented key aspects of Mueller's report and decisions in the investigation, which has helped further the president's false narrative about the investigation. After receiving Mueller's report, Barr wrote and released a letter on March 24th describing Barr's own decision not to indict the president for obstruction of justice. That letter selectively quotes and summarizes points in Mueller's report in misleading ways. Mueller's report says he chose not to decide whether Trump broke the law because there's an official DOJ opinion that indicting a sitting president is unconstitutional, and because of concerns about impacting the president's ability to govern and preempting possible impeachment. Barr's letter doesn't mention those issues when explaining why Mueller chose not to make a prosecutorial decision. He instead selectively quotes Mueller in a way that makes it sound falsely, as if Mueller's decision stemmed from legal/factual issues specific to Trump's actions. But in fact, Mueller finds considerable evidence that several of Trump's actions detailed in the report meet the elements of obstruction, and Mueller's constitutional and prudential issues with indicting a sitting president would preclude indictment regardless of what he found. In noting why Barr thought the president's intent in impeding the investigation was insufficient to establish obstruction, Barr selectively quotes Mueller to make it sound as if his analysis was much closer to Barr's analysis than it actually was. And Barr quotes Mueller, and he's then like now enumerating what the analysis was. Barr quotes Mueller saying that evidence didn't establish that Trump was personally involved in crimes related to Russian election interference. And Barr then claims that Mueller found that fact relevant to whether the president had the intent to obstruct justice. But Mueller's quote is taken from a section in which he describes other improper motives could have had and notes, quote, "The injury to the integrity of the justice system is the same regardless of whether a person committed an underlying wrong," unquote. None of that is in Barr's letter. As a result of Barr's March 24th letter, the public and Congress were misled.
Yes.
Mueller himself notes this in a March 27th letter to Barr saying that Barr, was that you? Oh,
that
ding?
Was me. That was me.
Ding?
I dinged.
I just heard a little saying that Barr's letter, quote, did not fully capture the context, nature, and substance of this office's work and conclusions, unquote. Mueller, quote, "There is now public confusion about critical aspects of the results of our investigation. This threatens to undermine the central purpose for which the department appointed the special counsel, to assure full public confidence in the outcome of the investigations," unquote. To, quote, "alleviate the misunderstandings that have arisen," unquote, Mueller urged the release of the report's introductions and executive summaries, which he had told Barr, quote, "accurately summarize Mueller's office work and conclusions," unquote. Barr declined. He allowed the confusion to fester and only released the materials 3 weeks later with the full redacted report. In the interim, Barr testified before a House committee and was misleading about his knowledge of Mueller's concerns. Colon. Barr was asked about reports, quote, "that members of Mueller's team are frustrated with the limited information included in your March 24th letter, that it does not adequately or accurately necessarily portrayed the report's findings. Do you know what they're referencing with that?" Unquote. Barr absurdly replied, "No, I don't. I suspect that they probably wanted more put out," unquote. Yet, Mueller
had directly raised those concerns to Barr. And Barr says he, quote, suspects they, quote, probably, unquote, wanted more materials put out, as if Mueller hadn't directly told him that. In subsequent statements and testimony, Barr used further misrepresentations to help build the president's false narrative that the investigation was unjustified. Barr notes that Mueller did not, quote, find any conspiracy to violate U.S. law involving Russia-linked persons and any persons associated with the Trump campaign, period, unquote. He then declares that Mueller found, quote, no collusion, unquote, and implies falsely that the investigation was baseless. But whether there's enough investigation for a conviction of a specific crime which Mueller thought was appropriate to charge is a different and much higher standard than whether the people with whom Mueller investigated had done anything worthy of investigation. In truth, Mueller's report describes concerning contacts between members of Trump's campaign and people in or connected to the Russian government. For instance, Trump Jr., Manafort, and Kushner took a meeting with a Russian lawyer whom Trump Jr. had been told worked for the Russian government and would provide documents to, quote, incriminate Hillary, unquote, as part of the Russian government's, quote, support for Mr. Trump, unquote. It's wrong to suggest that the fact that Mueller did not choose to indict anyone for this means there wasn't a basis to investigate whether it amounted to a crime or, quote, collusion, or whether it was in fact part of Russia's effort to help Trump's candidacy. This is long, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But there's only a few more, yeah.
Yeah. The last one is the one that I liked. Okay, Barr said the White House, quote, fully cooperated with the investigation and that Mueller, quote, never sought or pushed to get more from the president, but the report says Mueller unsuccessfully sought an interview with the president for over a year. The report says the president's counsel was told that interviewing him was vital to Mueller's investigation and that it would be in the interest of public and the presidency still trumped of the public and the presidency still Trump refused. The president instead gave written answers to questions submitted by the special counsel. Those answers are often incomplete or unresponsive.
Right.
Mueller found them inadequate and again sought to interview the president. Ultimately, the special counsel, quote, recognized that the president would not be interviewed voluntarily, quote, unquote, and chose not to subpoena him because of concerns that the resulting, quote, potentially lengthy constitutional litigation, unquote, would delay completion of the investigation. And here's the clincher. Barr has so far successfully used his position to sell the president's false narrative to the American people. This will continue if those who have read the report do not start pushing back on his misrepresentations and share the truth.
Yep.
Whew.
Yep.
Okay, time for a nap. but yeah, that, you know, he's doing really well laying out a narrative that needs to be laid out, whereas so far the Democrats have done that sporadically but not effectively. And if they would only have impeachment inquiry hearings, they would be able to consolidate everything that they're collecting and put it out in one straightforward narrative.
Yeah. The fact that Justin Amash, again, is coming forth to tell the truth really makes the rest of his party look like bigger assholes than they already are. I mean,
yes,
you know, I don't even know how else to put it. And the fact that he's being ostracized by his own party, it's just mind-boggling. This whole situation is unbelievable. And then I'm reminded that before the impeachment hearings began for Richard Nixon, the Watergate hearings began, his approval rating was pretty high. It was, I think, up around 70%. And once the hearings started and people began actually hearing unedited testimony about what happened, about the shit that Nixon was doing, those approval ratings started to spiral. And all of a sudden, Republicans started bailing. And it was finally a group of Republicans who told him, you either resign or this impeachment's going to be really ugly. And he resigned.
Right. Right. I've actually put that chart out that shows the decline, several times. There's something else. People keep, oh my God, it's like, I'm so tired of getting this reply, but I understand why. People keep replying to me, but, you know, like the Senate's not going to go anywhere. And as a matter of fact, I just tweeted out a picture of three senators that are going to obstruct.
any impeachment,
Well, Mitch McConnell, he probably.
No, but there were, three other senators.
Right. Yeah. Well, they can make it so that, you know, it's a one day trial. They can do a lot of things, but the
House.
They can
stop it completely.
That's fine. What they do in the Senate is what they do in the Senate. The House.
Exactly.
Can hold the hearings. Let the House hold the hearings so the American people hear what happened.
That's exactly right. That's where I was going. People keep saying, but the Senate's going to obstruct. They're not going to, they're not going to even do it, or they're not, they're going to not vote, you know, to convict. And I keep saying what we need are the 24/7 network coverage of all these hearings that open people's eyes. And even if nothing happens, Trump will have to face all that testimony and all that evidence. And the Republicans are going to have to find themselves in the position of defending him.
Yep. That's true.
On them.
That's right. Don't worry about what's going to happen in the Senate.
Exactly.
Go through the process. And the first part of the process are the hearings in the House, televised for everyone to see. And there's no saying, I'm not complying with the subpoena. Sorry. In an impeachment trial, they show up. Nothing's redacted. Nothing is in a closed session. It's all out in the open, as it should be.
And you don't see like a cop saying, I'm not going to arrest somebody who just robbed a bank because I'm not sure how the trial's going to come out.
Exactly. It doesn't
You have a crime committed. You do something about it.
Uh-huh.
And to not do something about it is a crime.
I agree. It is. And I think Nancy Pelosi is playing politics and she needs to stop. It's not her decision. Actually, it is her decision, I guess. But yes. We need to tell her Kennedy from Louisiana say? Urinate or get off the pot.
Yeah. 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 Oh God. Yeah. Okay. So now speaking of impeachment, Ryan Goodman, a former special counsel, to the Defense Department and co-editor-in-chief of Justice Security. He said, if you're questioning what does Congress gain from launching an impeachment inquiry, this is the most convincing piece I have read from the perspective that Congress would gain several legal authorities, leverage in litigation, and more. And he links over, and I have a little synopsis I'll read to you that I tweeted out, but he links over to justsecurity.org. And the name of the article is How Impeachment Proceedings Would Strengthen Congress's Investigatory Powers. Here's a couple of excerpts. Nevertheless, there are additional useful authorities, such as the power to gather information in foreign countries that could be granted as part of an impeachment inquiry. That's no small matter in an impeachment that may involve foreign emoluments and international affairs. There's one reason. Here's more. The legislative need for information is less compelling when it is merely for oversight purposes. This is what you were getting at. Opening an impeachment inquiry undercuts any attempt by the administration to use Senate Select Committee in this manner. Consider current dispute between House and Trump administration over the testimony of McGahn. The Office of Legal Counsel issued an opinion finding McGahn is immune from even having to appear before a congressional committee. Its opinion, however, contains no mention of impeachment power, which is certainly not accidental. Here's more. Initiating an impeachment proceeding will also assist the House Judiciary Committee in getting access, this is again what you were getting at, to grand jury information protected by Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 6E. It also is likely that subpoena enforcement suits for impeachment purposes will be handled more expeditiously by the courts. When information is sought solely for oversight purposes, it is difficult to convince judges that there is urgency. Finally, initiating an impeachment inquiry provides the House with several, quote, self-help options to better secure the production of information. And I'm going to read you that last part from the article itself. The last paragraph. First, to the extent the House wishes to employ the remedy of inherent contempt in which the House through its own agents would detain or fine a contumacious witness, this strategy would be most defensible in an impeachment proceeding where the House is exercising a judicial function. Second, if Trump continues to defy or direct orders others to defy congressional subpoenas, especially for appearance before an impeachment hearing, this in itself could support an article of impeachment. Third,
The House could draw an adverse inference from the unjustifiable failure to produce evidence, finding that the president's refusal to produce information reflect the fact that it would not be helpful to his case. In short, initiating a formal impeachment proceeding, though not a silver bullet, would significantly enhance the House's ability to gather relevant information in a timely fashion. Claims that oversight hearings are equally powerful are just wishful thinking.
I agree. No, there's a reason there are oversight hearings and there are impeachment hearings. We
right.
need impeachment hearings. I'm sorry, oversight is just more of the same. It's dilly-dallying. It's just, you know, waiting and hoping it goes away.
Exactly.
That's not going to do the trick.
Right. I mean, it's good that, you know, all hearings are good, and if they can get some information out there, that's great. But impeachment inquiry hearings are a more cohesive way to do it and a more effective way to do it, and all the reasons I gave you are why.
Yep.
So,
I hear you.
That's that. Okay.
I hear you.
So
Speaking of threads, by the way,
yes.
did you see that Memorial Day thread under the U.S. Army's tweet?
I saw it. I read, just started to read part of it, and then I had to leave the house. So
right,
I never got to read the whole thing.
Let me share a little bit of this with you. So over
yeah.
the Memorial Day weekend, a tweet from the U.S. Army went viral. It wasn't their tweet, but the responses to their
mm-hmm.
tweet. So the Army first featured a little video from a soldier explaining how the Army has influenced his life. And it was a, you know, warm and fuzzy kind of thing. And then, the Army asked in a tweet, how has serving impacted you? Well, the question has received over 12,000 responses, most along these lines. Here's a few of them. From Ms. Galahad. My grandfather was a World War I Purple Heart veteran. Because of his wounds and gas exposure, he lost his career of physical education teacher and coach. I do not recall him ever saying one word to me. From Helen Lee Fowler, my father served as a paramedic in Korea and was held prisoner at Chosin. His PTSD led to abuse of myself and my five siblings, and several of us have PTSD as a result. Here's another one, Elizabeth Gray. I was sexually assaulted and discharged at Madigan Army Hospital when I reported what happened. My DD-214 was impacted. I was not awarded full benefits. I lived in my car, struggled with suicide attempts, and no self-worth. Now I'm fighting a PTSD claim.
Wow.
From Julie Swegman, my dad served in Vietnam. He was exposed to Agent Orange, and I was born with multiple birth defects. What he did impacts my life every day. I can't have children, and I'm in pain constantly. Alejandro, my friend from high school joined the Army, went on deployment and lost his best friend there, came back with PTSD, committed suicide in front of his wife by jumping off a moving vehicle on the highway. He was really proud of being a soldier, but the Army would never know about it. And it goes on and on and on and on and on and on like this. You read it and you're in tears. Somebody put a Medium post together with a lot of the responses because they're afraid the Army is going to take this Twitter thread down. I'm
mm-hmm.
surprised it's still up. And then you have Donald Trump, who obviously read none of this because he kept wishing happy Memorial Day to both U.S. and Japanese service members during his final day visiting
sure.
Japan. Happy Memorial Day.
Happy Memorial Day. What
wow.
an idiot.
Wow.
He's such an idiot. Okay.
So there's that.
Yeah.
That's a
yeah.
thread.
I saw one that was so sad. I mean, they were just heartbreaking.
Yeah. It just goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
Here. Hello, nurse. 13 years ago, my ex came home a bitter, hateful, angry person who was never aided in getting help with PTSD. He constantly snapped at me, blacked out, and beat me and became a raging alcoholic. Now I can't stand to be touched and jump at loud noises. He's still serving. He's still serving.
Oh, God. When I was teaching, one of the kids I had in my shows, her dad came home with PTSD and became an alcoholic and started getting violent with her. And then
mm-hmm.
she went on to drugs.
Yeah.
And then by the time she graduated, you know, I have no idea what happened anymore after that, but sweet kid too. And she knew what was going on. She was aware of it as it was happening. But, and we even wrote I had the kids help me write a play and it was real personal. It was all these segments. It was a play just consisting of one scene after another where a kid gets up and has an emotional
monologue that they wrote about something about their life. And her story was part of that. It was one of the best parts of the show. So she knew what was going on as it was happening, but she still had it happen. You know, she still got involved with drugs and, oh God, knowingly. I think she was kicking them as she was graduating, so that was a good thing. Anyway, to change the subject, Jack, who is a travel, a person on Twitter who travels and takes photos, said, if any of my tweets ever go viral, I hope it's this one. He posts a picture of the Grand Canyon. He said, the Grand Canyon is facing a big problem right now. There's no, are you there?
I'm still here. Yeah, okay, I don't know what that, I heard that weird beep.
Yeah,
the FBI listening in, I guess.
Oh, okay. Okay. Hi, guys.
Hi.
there's no national news coverage about this, and some very rich people want to keep it that way. And then John Hudson, who tweets on politics, he quote tweeted over that and said, Trump administration, let's sell national parkland on the edge of the Grand Canyon to a foreign developer who will build a theme park that will dry up springs, killing wildlife, and displacing indigenous people who have lived there since forever because we hate America. That's what that's about.
Uh-huh.
It's about them commercializing the Grand Canyon.
Wow.
And privatizing it.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
That's, so it got well over 100,000 retweets. Wow. So you know people are listening.
Good.
Good. well, hello there. Hamilton came to say hi.
Aw, hi Hammy.
Hi Hammy. That's my dog for those who don't know. Anyway.
So let me just throw in something I mentioned last week that on Friday night, David and I were going out. We went to see Joe Jackson in concert again. One of my favorite artists who was touring, he's doing the Four Decades tour, and it was brilliant. I mean, it was, get out. Oh, I guess I hear him in the other room. Get out and see live music, or go see Randy Rainbow, who's touring, or go see live theater or something. Get out and do something fun, because it really helps. It helps
it
to
really
take
does.
Your mind off of this shit, which is, I think, you know, it killing us.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I do it by walking Hammy. He keeps me sane.
Yeah.
He really does.
Yeah.
We take him, you know, to parks and to the beach and stuff, and he's such a happy dog that just watching him, just I forget everything.
Yeah,
he's amazing.
I hear you.
Anyway, here's one from Mark Joseph Stern, Slate writer. He said, anyone who thinks SCOTUS would surely invalidate a law that targets women who undergo abortions should read Thomas's opinion today. He essentially says that women who undergo abortions are eugenicist child murderers. This
right.
is from
okay.
Thomas.
And then, I don't know if you saw this, there was a back and forth between Clarence Thomas and Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the footnotes in that abortion opinion.
Oh,
did
I didn't
hear about
see
this?
That.
Okay, let me find, first I want to share with you, because it's unbelievable. This is the Clarence Thomas footnote attacking Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Okay? Here's what Clarence Thomas wrote. I'm just opening up the tweet again. This is Clarence Thomas speaking. Justice Ginsburg's dissent from this holding makes little sense. It is not a, quote, waste of our resources to summarily reverse an incorrect decision that created a circuit split. Post at two. I don't know what that means. And Justice Ginsburg does not even attempt to argue that the decision below was correct. Instead, she adopts Chief Judge Wood's alternative suggestion that regulating the disposition of an aborted child's body might impose an undue burden on the mother's right to abort that, all in parentheses, already aborted child. This argument is difficult to understand, to say the least, which may explain why even respondent Planned Parenthood did not make it. The argument also lacks evidentiary support. And then it says, see Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, Inc. versus Commissioner of Indiana State Department of Health, which, by the way, for those who don't know what happened, the court refused to take up the subject of the actual abortion law, but upheld the part of the law that said, even if you suffer a miscarriage or have an abortion, you need to have a funeral for that medical waste.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ugh.
So here's Ruth Bader Ginsburg's footnote responding to Clarence Thomas. She wrote, Justice Thomas's footnote displays more heat than light. The note overlooks many things. Quote, this court reviews judgments in italics, not statements or opinions. And then she quotes something, and then it says, a woman who exercises her constitutionally protected right to terminate a pregnancy is not a, quote, mother. The cost of and trauma potentially induced by a post-procedure requirement may well constitute an undue burden. Under the rational basis standard applied below, Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky had no need to marshal evidence that Indiana's law posed an undue burden. Now, this is all written like in legalese with citations and laws, but apparently for those who read legalese all the time, this is an attack. This is showing real
right.
growing tensions over abortion at the Supreme Court. This is not normal.
Right. No, exactly. Well, Kamala Harris has a new policy that she just announced, and she's going to be having an MSNBC town hall tonight with Lawrence O'Donnell, and I'm going to read you a little four-parter here.
Okay.
Kamala Harris will participate in an MSNBC town hall tonight in South Carolina. She will announce a new policy. This is from Chelsea Janes, Washington Post.
Okay.
She will announce a new policy plan to protect reproductive rights. The policy, per a campaign aide, will require states and jurisdictions with a history of undermining Roe v. Wade in the last 25 years to receive pre-clearance from Harris's DOJ to pass any abortion law or practice can take effect. So basically, Harris is planning to target restrictive voting laws like those passed in Alabama and Georgia by backing legislation that would force such laws to seek DOJ approval before going into effect. Echoes the Voting Rights Act, which requires similar preclearance laws for laws and jurisdictions with a history of restricting voting rights laws. So she's, you know, when in the voting rights thing, you had to get preclearance before you could pass a disenfranchisement law, right? With the Voting Rights Act. She's doing the same thing with women's reproductive rights.
Right. Right.
It challenged Roe v. Wade. That's what she's trying to do here. So that will score her some points because right now this is a very hot topic and women better get out and vote.
No kidding. By the way, did you hear about this video that this, minor league baseball team played in their Memorial Day tribute?
No.
Okay, so it's the Fresno, I think, AAA team. I forget what major league team they're affiliated with, but anyway, they played a video during the ball game, narrated by Ronald Reagan, believe it or not, and I queued it up to the part of interest here. Let me bring it up on the screen so those who are watching on YouTube can see it. Everyone else can hear it. And what I'll do is explain to you. I'll tell you what the pictures are flashing on the screen at the various points. So I'm only going to play a few seconds of it for you. So here they're showing a fighter pilot in the air.
Prey upon their neighbors. As for the enemies of freedom.
The enemies of freedom.
Those who are potential
Kim Jong-un.
They will be reminded that
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Fidel
people.
Castro. So they put AOC in between Kim Jong-un and Fidel Castro when they're talking about the enemies of the people. In fact, let me tell you the exact quote, what he was saying when that played. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. And again, that played as first Kim Jong-un's picture flashed, then AOC, then Fidel Castro.
Oh, my God.
Pretty amazing.
At a ball game.
At a ball game. Now, said sports team, Fresno whoever's. Hold on. I just saw their apology. They did apologize.
Okay.
And of course now I can't. Fresno Grizzlies. The Fresno Grizzlies. They wrote, we're embarrassed we allowed this video to play without seeing it in its entirety first. We unconditionally apologize to Representative Ocasio-Cortez. In addition to our fans, community, and those we heard, it was a mistake and we will ensure that nothing like it ever happens again. I want to know how they allowed it to happen in the first place. Who edited that shit together?
I'm going to sign off with something about Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden.
Okay.
From Adam Best, an activist. Elizabeth Warren thrills small donors with personal phone calls and impresses voters during town halls. Media. Is she likable? Joe Biden holds private fundraisers for lobbyists and big donors while his campaign hides him from voters. Media, a man of the people.
Okay.
So likable versus man of the people for doing virtually, yeah, you know, for not doing the same thing, but for doing, never mind.
By the way,
get what I'm saying. I'm not even going to try anymore.
One thing to notice is if they televise a Biden rally. Oh, wait, does he hold rallies or just fundraisers? I forget. Look how many people are in the audience. He's getting tens of people turning out. Just saying.
Oh, is it really bad?
It's really bad.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. And with that, we're done for the day. Gotta laugh. Find her on the Twitters and here every Tuesday. Thank you, Laffy.
Thank you, too.
See you next week. Bye, everyone. All right. Since we didn't play it earlier, I will leave you with today's edition of What's News.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
One more norm that's been thrown out with the Trump administration, the old adage that says politics ends at the water's edge. Donald Trump returns to the White House Tuesday after a brief trip to Japan to become the first foreign leader to meet with Japan's new emperor, Naruhito, and bond with his closest ally on the world stage, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, over golf, food, and sumo wrestling. Trump rage-tweeted throughout his trip, taking direct aim at former Vice President and current 2020 candidate Joe Biden. In one of them, he seemingly excuses North Korea dictator Kim Jong-un for his latest rocket launch and echoes the dear leader in a smear against Biden. In a presser with Abe, Trump doubled down.
You tweeted about North Korea yesterday. Do you believe that they violated UN resolutions with the short-range missile launch? And does it give you pause at all to be appearing to side with a brutal dictator instead of with a fellow American, the former Vice President Joe Biden?
Well, Kim Jong-un made a statement that Joe Biden is a low IQ individual. He probably is, based on his record. I think I agree with him on that. At the same time, my people think it could have been a violation, as you know. I view it differently. I view it as a man. Perhaps he wants to get attention, and perhaps not. Who knows? It doesn't matter. All I know is that there have been no nuclear tests. There have been no ballistic missiles going out. There have been no long-range missiles going out. And I think that someday we'll have a deal.
The New York Times Monday revealed that under Trump, the U.S. government will complete the rollback of the most significant federal effort to curb greenhouse gas emissions, of course initiated during the Obama administration. The administration is planning to limit climate science projections in federal studies to the year 2040. By so doing, it will no longer fulfill what scientists say is one of the most urgent jobs of climate science studies, reporting on the future effects of a rapidly warming planet and presenting a picture of what the Earth could look like by the end of the century if the global economy continues to emit heat-trapping carbon dioxide pollution from burning fossil fuels. Stating something that's news to no one, we're already feeling the effects of climate change. It's that never-ending weather story. This time, two suspected tornadoes barreling through Dayton, Ohio, just 30 minutes apart, and causing significant damage and injuries. A third suspected tornado injured several people in a town 90 miles north of Dayton. There were some 27 reports of tornadoes Monday in Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois, Indiana, and Colorado, and much of the Midwest is at risk Tuesday for more severe weather. In a win for women's rights, Illinois Democrats advanced new legislation Sunday that would further protect a woman's rights to reproductive health. The bill would see women entitled to make decisions with limited government interference, repeal outdated anti-abortion legislation, and require insurance companies to pay for abortions. Now that's the kind of news story I like bringing to you. The European Union's parliament elections were held last week. In the UK, the contest was dominated by Brexit. Although Nigel Farage's Brexit party came in a comfortable first with 32% of the vote, it's not quite the complete picture. The votes that went to pro-Remain parties add up to 40.4%. In effect, the UK is split in two when it comes to Brexit. The Labour Party is now facing calls to get behind a second referendum. Far-right nationalist parties didn't surge across Europe, but they are strong and stable. In France, Marine Le Pen's national rally finished ahead of Emmanuel Macron's renaissance. Green parties across Europe had their strongest ever EU parliamentary election performance after running on a platform of transformative environmental change. Overall, Greens secured 71 seats in the European Parliament, up from 52 seats 5 years ago. According to exit polling, the Greens' surge was bolstered by strong support from young voters. Over the Memorial Day weekend, a tweet from the U.S. Army went viral. Well, not so much the tweet, but the responses. The Army had featured a video message from a soldier explaining how the Army has influenced his life and then asked, quote, "How has serving impacted you?" The question has received over 12,000 responses, most along these lines. From Elizabeth Gray, "I was sexually assaulted and discharged at Madigan Army Hospital when I reported what happened. My DD-214 was impacted. I was not awarded full benefits. I lived in my car, struggled with suicide attempts, and no self-worth. Now I'm fighting a PTSD claim." And this one from Julie Swegman, "My dad served in Vietnam. He was exposed to Agent Orange, and I was born with multiple birth defects. What he did impacts my life every day. I can't have children, and I'm in pain constantly." And they continue like that. I'm guessing Donald Trump read none of them, as he kept wishing Happy Memorial Day to both U.S. and Japanese service members during his final day visiting Japan. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.